Are you a cat person? Or does your best friend bark? Sun Sounds presents Animal Companions Monday afternoons at 4. Animal Companions is all about our friends with fur, feathers, and fins. Stories and practical information from Cat Fancy, Dog Fancy, Best Friends, Bird Talk, and other magazines about our animal companions. It's interesting, informative, and fun. Animal Companions, Monday afternoons at 4 on Sun Sounds.
My name is Tyler. I'm 15 years old. I was 11 years old when I found out that I had cancer. I was afraid that I was going to lose my leg.
For Tyler, a bone transplant meant the chance to live a normal life.
If I hadn't had the transplant, I would probably have a prosthesis. But the transplant let me be a normal kid again.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ, eye, and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to donatelifeaz.org.
Sun Sounds would like to take a moment to thank the Green Valley Country Fair White Elephant. For many years, they have shown their support of Sun Sounds with several generous donations. The Green Valley White Elephant supports many fine organizations in southern Arizona, and we are very grateful to be one of them. Through their remarkable efforts, the White Elephant reaches thousands of people every day, positively affecting their lives. Thank you to the fine people at the Green Valley White Elephant, from all of us at Sun Sounds.
And now, another goofy law from Sun Sounds of Arizona. In California, the law prohibits a woman from driving a car while dressed in a housecoat.
This is Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson, reading to make a difference for you. Stay tuned as we turn the page.
Good morning to our Tucson listeners. You have found the live reading of the Arizona Daily Star for June the 22nd, 2018. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona. The time is 7:01 a.m. My name is Bill Tisch. I'm here with Barney Schneider. And it's a beautiful day outside. It's going to get really, really hot. I always like to mention the birthdays for June 22nd. I want to say happy birthday to Cindy Lauper. We know her best for Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And let's see, Time After Time. And a lot of hit music there. Freddie Prinze Jr., happy birthday. And oh, it's the birthday of the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. It was written actually in the Civil War. But on June 22nd, 1944, it was adopted by the United States Congress as our national Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. It's been written a few times, rewritten, I should say, reworded. But happy birthday. And that's about it as far as big events this day in history. Let's see here. As far as this day right now, we ought to check the weather. And we've got the weather from Lisa Villegas of KOLD News 13. She writes, happy Friday. Why, thank you, Lisa. Excessive heat warning is in effect from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. today. It's going to get hot. Temperatures will range between 106 to 111 degrees across parts of southern Arizona. The sun will be out and just a light breeze with winds sustained between 5 and 13 miles an hour. Temperatures will drop this weekend as high pressure heads out into the Pacific. That's odd. It's going west? Huh. Okay. High pressure heads out into the Pacific, and our average temperature will be 102. Okay. Oh, average for right now is 102. Let's see. So for today, she's saying 108 for a high. Depends, I suppose, on exactly where you are. Low of 73. We've got, it'll be 101 at noon, it says. Winds gusting to 14 miles an hour. Not much wind. Tomorrow, Saturday, it'll be a little cooler, 103, low of 75. Sunday, just 100, just 100, with a low of 73. And Monday, 101 with a high of 71. No chance of rain in the forecast period. We did get a real gully washer last weekend. That was great. Caught up some of the rain. Average rain to date should be 3.25. We're a little below that, just under 3 inches. So that was great to catch us up last weekend. I got absolutely pounded up where I live. I bet you did too, Saturday. Yeah. The hail, I couldn't see across the street. It was coming down so heavy. You didn't get hail? No? Oh, well. Let's see. Okay, well, fun's fun. We got to get on with the Daily Star here. So I'm going to read the headlines, and I'm going to turn it over to Barney for the first story. We've got experts say jaguar seen in Arizona has died. Confusion and uncertainty at the border after Trump acts to reverse his policy. And Trump jabbed first, and now the world hits back in the trade fight. And finally, herpes viruses could set the stage for Alzheimer's, a report says. So we'll turn it over to you, Barney, to get us going.
You're not
going to
tell them about that picture on the front page?
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody knows about that, don't they? Okay, big front page picture. What else? Ayton, DeAndre Ayton, big giant basketball player for the Arizona basketball team, got drafted first. He's going to the Phoenix Suns, and we'll read about that when we get to sports.
Okay, here we go. Thank you.
Okay.
Trump jabbed first, and now world hits back in trade fight, by Paul Wiseman of AP. He is an economics writer for AP. Dateline Washington, the United States attacked first, imposing tariffs on steel and aluminum from around the globe and threatening to hit tens of billions of dollars in Chinese products. Now the world is punching back. The European Union is set Friday to slap tariffs on $3.4 billion in American products, from whiskey and motorcycles to peanuts and cranberries. India and Turkey have already targeted U.S. products ranging from rice to autos to sunscreen. And the highest-stakes fight still looms. In 2 weeks, the United States is to start taxing $3.4 billion in Chinese products. Beijing has vowed to immediately retaliate with its own tariffs on U.S. soybeans and other farm products in a direct shot at President Trump's supporters in America's heartland. The tit-for-tat conflict between the U.S. and China, the world's two largest economies, is poised to escalate from there. The rhetoric is already intensifying. Quote, we oppose the act of extreme pressure and blackmail by swinging the big stick of trade protectionism, a spokesman for China's Commerce Ministry said Thursday. The U.S. is abusing the tariff methods and starting trade wars all around the world. Cecilia Malmström, the EU's trade commissioner, acknowledged that the EU had targeted some iconic American imports for tariffs, like Harley-Davidson motorcycles and bourbon, to make noise and put pressure on U.S. leaders. John Murphy, a senior vice president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, estimates that $75 billion in U.S. products will be subject to new foreign tariffs by the end of the first week of July. We've never seen anything like this, said Mary Lovely, a Syracuse University economist who studies international trade, at least not since countries tried to wall themselves off from foreign competition during the Great Depression. Those personally in the line of fire are among the most concerned. It will be a disaster, said Nagesh Balusu, manager of the Salt Whiskey Bar and Dining Room in London, who expects the European Union's tariffs to add more than $7 to the price of a bottle of Jack Daniels, which is imported from Tennessee. It's going to hit customers, that's for sure, Balusu said. How they'll take it, we'll have to wait and see. As painful as the brewing trade war could prove, many have seen it coming. Trump ran for presidency on a vow to topple 7 decades of American policy that had favored ever freer trade among nations. He charged that a succession of poorly negotiated accords, including the North American Free Trade Agreement and the pact that admitted China into the World Trade Organization, put American manufacturers at an unfair disadvantage and destroyed millions of U.S. factory jobs. He pledged to impose tariffs on imports from countries that Trump said had exploited the United States. Late last month, Trump proceeded to infuriate U.S. allies from the EU to Canada and Mexico by imposing tariffs of 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum. The president justified the move by saying imported metals threatened America's national security, a dubious justification that countries have used rarely because it can be so easily abused. And he is threatening to impose another national security-based tariff on import of cars, trucks, and auto parts. Trump has also started a trade fight with China over Beijing's efforts to overtake U.S. technological dominance. China's tactics range from forcing American companies to hand over technology in exchange for access to Chinese market to outright cyber theft. The White House last week announced plans to slap 25% tariffs on 1,100 Chinese goods worth $50 billion in imports. Trump would start July 6 by trading $34 billion worth of products and later add tariffs on an additional $16 billion in goods. The Chinese have said they will respond. Trump said he would retaliate against Beijing's counterpunch by targeting an additional $200 billion in Chinese products and then yet another $200 billion if China refused to back down. All told, it totals $450 billion in potential tariffs, covering nearly 90% of goods China sends to the United States.
Okay, thank you, Barney. I'm going to turn to this jaguar story here. Experts say jaguar seen in Arizona has died. The pelt photo appears to match earlier pictures in the Huachucas. This is by Tony Davis. There's a photo of this pelt here splayed out in display. And the caption of the photo says, "The Northern Jaguar Project obtained this photo. Based on spot patterns, officials believe it is the same cat that roamed the Huachuca Mountains." And there's a sidebar here. I'm going to just read this so I don't forget later. It says, "Did you know each individual jaguar has a unique pattern of a unique pattern on its fur of black spots that form rosettes of different sizes? The rosettes are like fingerprints that are unique to each animal." And the source of that is the Jaguar Conservation Fund website. I guess, what do they say? A jaguar can't change his spots? Oh, wait, that's not what they say. A leopard is what they say. A leopard can't change his spots. Okay. Nonetheless, let's get to the story here. A male, this is by Tony Davis, I think I mentioned. A male jaguar that roamed the Huachuca Mountains in 2016 and 2017 is now believed to be dead. A nonprofit group that seeks to protect northern Mexican jaguars this week provided the Arizona Daily Star with a photo of a jaguar pelt. The pelt, quote, "certainly appears to be the same jaguar photographed in the Huachucas southeast of Tucson and near the Mexican border," said Jim DeVos, Assistant Wildlife Management Director for the Arizona Game and Fish Department in Phoenix. 6 game and fish officials looked at the latest photo and compared it to an earlier photo of the Huachuca's jaguar. They found a, quote, "a very high correlation between the two pictures based on the spot patterns in the photo," DeVos said. Jim Rorabaugh, a retired U.S. fish and wildlife biologist, said he also looked at both photos and believes they are of the same cat. The last time the Huachuca's jaguar was photographed by an official camera was in March 2017. It was photographed in that mountain range December 1st, 2016 by a camera owned by the University of Arizona, which has been photographing and studying jaguars in the U.S. since 2012. The jaguar is listed as an endangered species in the U.S. and Mexico. Killing jaguars is illegal in both countries. The photo was provided to the Star by the Northern Jaguar Project, a Tucson-based group that operates a reserve in Sonora aimed at protecting jaguars. Group officials don't know when the pelt photo was taken or who took it, said Carmina Gutierrez Gonzalez, a Jaguar Project biologist. But they know it was taken in Mexico, said Diana Hadley, the group's board president. The group's biologists also confirmed that the jaguar pelt photograph was of the same animal that was photographed in the Huachucas. Jaguar Project officials declined to say where they got the photo. The Jaguar Project works regularly with ranchers living near the reserve, including paying them every time a jaguar is photographed on their properties. They said that releasing the information about the source of the photo could hurt their ability to work with ranchers whose support for the project work is needed. Law enforcement officials with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which enforces the Endangered Species Act, say that if they can obtain information about the dead jaguar that can be corroborated with information from other sources, we may look into the matter some more, said Jeff Humphrey, a Wildlife Service spokesman based in Phoenix. We are very upset. It's terrible. We are very upset that somebody killed that jaguar. I just can't believe that. It's really sad for us, said Gutierrez Gonzalez. It's unfortunate the jaguar seen often in the Huachucas isn't alive anymore, said Game and Fish's DeVos. There is not much more to say. We don't know any of the specifics, where, when, or how. We're trying to get as much information as we can, DeVos said. This case offers a perfect example of why we need jaguar conservation in Mexico so we don't have a tragedy like this again, said Hadley, the president of the Northern Jaguar Project. It has been known for many decades that jaguars are under poaching pressure, said Randy Seraglio, a conservation advocate for the Tucson-based Center for Biological Diversity. That's all the more reason to protect habitat on both sides of the border to give them safe places to live, Seraglio said. This animal was photographed very close to the border several times in the United States, he said. Last year, students at Hiaki High School, a Tucson charter school catering to Yaqui students, voted to name the Huachucas jaguar Yooko. Yooko. The Yaqui word for jaguar, Yooko, the Yaqui word for jaguar, in an effort arranged collaboratively by the center and the nonprofit group Conservation Catalyst, with Catalyst, the C-A-T capitalized. The real tragedy is having to explain to those kids at Hiaki High School that somebody killed their jaguar, Seraglio said. Seven male jaguars have been seen in the Southwest since 1996, all but one in Arizona. U of A cameras previously photographed another jaguar in the Santa Rita Mountains near the site of the proposed Rosemont Mine from fall 2012 through October 2015. That jaguar hasn't been seen since then. In addition to the Huachucas jaguar, the other U.S. jaguar known to have died since 1996 was Macho B, which was euthanized at the direction of state and federal biologists at the Phoenix Zoo in March 2009 at the age of 15. That followed his capture, radio collaring, and recapture after the animal weakened dramatically in the wild. Jaguars are much more common in Mexico, which is believed to be the source of the male jaguars that have been photographed in the U.S. in recent decades. And if you want more information, call reporter Tony Davis at 806-7746. And back to you, Barney.
Confusion, uncertainty at border after Trump acts to reverse policy, by Norman Merchant and Susan Montoya Bryan of the Associated Press, Dateline McAllen, Texas. The U.S. government wrestled with the ramifications Thursday of President Trump's move to stop separating families at the border with no clear plan to reunite the more than 2,300 children already taken from their parents and Congress again failing to take action on immigration reform. In a day of confusion and conflicting reports, the Trump administration began drawing up plans to house as many as 20,000 migrants on U.S. military bases. But officials gave differing accounts as to whether those beds would be for children or for entire families. At the time, the Justice Department went to court in an attempt to overturn a decades-old settlement that limits to 20 days the amount of time migrant children can be locked up without their families. Democratic mayors and religious leaders, meanwhile, traveled to the border to step up pressure on the White House over its hardline immigration policies. And in the Texas border city of McAllen, federal prosecutors unexpectedly did not pursue charges against 17 immigrants. A federal prosecutor said there was no prosecution sought in light of Trump's executive order ending the practice of separating families. It was unclear whether that meant the Trump administration was dropping its month-old zero policy of prosecuting all adults caught trying to enter the country illegally. The president did not answer the question directly, but showed no sign of softening. "We have to be very, very strong on the border. If we don't do it, you will be inundated with people, and you really won't have a country," Trump said. The uncertainties resulted from the abrupt ending Wednesday of a White House policy that separated more than 2,300 children from their parents over the past several weeks. The practice set off an outcry from all corners of the world, with the images and sounds of crying children dominating the news. After Trump's executive order, a host of unanswered questions remained, including what will happen to the children already separated from their parents, and where the government will house all the newly detained migrants, with the system already bursting at the seams. Officials from the Defense Department and Health and Human Resources said the Pentagon has agreed to provide space on military bases to hold up to 20,000 people detained after illegally crossing the Mexican border. It was unclear which bases would be used, but HHS has assessed 4 as prospective housings for children: Fort Bliss, Goodfellow Air Force Base, and Dies Air Force Base in Texas, and Little Rock Air Force Base in Arkansas. The Justice Department asked a federal judge to change the rules regarding the detention of immigrant children seeking permission to detain them for longer than the permitted 20 days, in an effort to keep them together with their parents. Meanwhile, the mayors of all 20 U.S. cities gathered at a holding facility for immigrant children in the border city of El Paso. They accused Trump of failing to address a crisis of his own making. They called for the immediate reunification of immigrant children with their families. "This is a humanitarian crisis," Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin said. In Washington, the House killed a hard-right immigration bill Thursday, and Republican leaders delayed a planned vote on a compromise GOP package, with party members fiercely divided on the issue. Democrats oppose both measures. The rejected bill would have curbed legal immigration and bolstered border security, but would not have granted a pathway to citizenship to Dreamers, who arrived in the country illegally as children. The delayed vote was on a compromise bill between GOP moderates and conservatives that would offer Dreamers a pathway to citizenship and provide $25 billion for Trump's border wall, among other things. And to you, Bill.
Okay, it's 7:22 here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. You're listening to the live reading of the Arizona Daily Star. We got one more story on the front page. Herpes viruses could set the stage for Alzheimer's, a report says. And this is by Lauren Neergaard of the Associated Press, Dateline Washington. Viruses that sneak into the brain just might play a role in Alzheimer's disease, scientists reported Thursday in a provocative study that promises to reignite some long-debated theories about what triggers the mind-robbing disease. The findings don't prove viruses cause Alzheimer's, nor do they suggest that it's contagious, But a team led by researchers at New York's Mount Sinai Health System found that certain viruses, including two extremely common herpes viruses, affect the behavior of genes involved in Alzheimer's. The idea that infections earlier in life might somehow set the stage for Alzheimer's decades later has simmered at the edge of mainstream medicine for years. It's been overshadowed by the prevailing theory that Alzheimer's stems from sticky plaques that clog the brain. Thursday's study has even some specialists who never embraced the infection connection saying that it's time for a closer look, especially as attempts to block those so-called beta amyloid plaques have failed. With an illness this terrible, we cannot afford to dismiss all scientific possibilities, said Dr. John Morris, who directs the Alzheimer's Research Center at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. He wasn't involved in the new research, but called it impressive. The study also fits with mounting evidence that showed how aggressively the brain's immune system defends itself against viruses or other germs. Evidence how aggressively the brain's immune system may be riskier than actual infection, said Alzheimer's specialist Dr. Rudolph Tanzi of Massachusetts General Hospital. With Harvard colleague Dr. Robert Moore, Tanzi has performed experiments showing that sticky beta amyloid captures invading germs by engulfing them, and that's why the plaque starts forming in the first place. The question remained, okay, in the Alzheimer brain, what are the microbes that matter, and what are the microbes that trigger the plaque, explained Tanzi, who also had no role in the new research. So they're saying that the virus doesn't cause it, it's the attack on the virus that's causing it, maybe. Okay. The team from Mount Sinai and Arizona State University came up with some viral suspects by accident. The study, funded by the National Institutes of Health, wasn't hunting viruses, but was looking for new drug targets for Alzheimer's. The researchers were using complex genetic data from hundreds of brains at several brain banks to compare differences between people who had died with Alzheimer's and the congenitively normal brains. The first clues that viruses were around came screaming out at us, said Mount Sinai geneticist Joel Dudley, a senior author of the research published Thursday in the journal Neuron. The team found viral genetic material at far higher levels in Alzheimer's-affected brains than in normal ones. Most abundant were two human herpes viruses known as HHV6A and HHV7 that infect most people during childhood, often with no symptoms, and then lie dormant in the body. That wasn't unusual. Since 1980, other researchers have linked a variety of bacteria and viruses, including another type of herpes that causes cold sores, to an increased risk of Alzheimer's. But it was never clear if germs were merely bystanders or actively spurring Alzheimer's. The new study went further. Researchers used computer models to check how the viral genes interacted with human genes. Human genes, proteins, the amyloid buildup, almost like the virus's social media connections, Dudley explained. We were able to see if viral genes are befriending some of the host genes. Come on. We were able to see if the viral genes are friending some of the host genes and if they tweet and who tweets back, Dudley said. Okay, they found a lot of interactions suggesting that the viruses could even switch on and off Alzheimer's-related genes. To see if those interactions mattered, the researchers bred mice lacking one molecule that herpes seemed to deplete. Sure enough, the animals developed more of those amyloid plaques. If the findings pan out, they could change how scientists look for new ways to treat or prevent Alzheimer's, said Dr. Miroslav Makiewicz of NIH's National Institute on Aging. Already, NIH is funding a first-step study to see if antiviral drug benefits people if an antiviral drug benefits people who have both mild Alzheimer's and different herpes viruses. Okay, so the time is 7:28 here on Sun Sounds. We're done with the front page. I'm going to turn to the local and regional news. Back to you.
Okay, possible murder-suicide leaves two dead, one wounded, by Shaq Davis of the Arizona Daily Star. A man and a teenage boy were found dead and a woman was wounded in an apparent murder-suicide at an Eastside home Thursday, Tucson police said. Police said they believe all three are members of the same family. A child inside the home in the 10,400 block of East Windstrom Drive alerted a neighbor just before 1 p.m. to the shooting, and the neighbor called 911, said Sergeant Pete Dugan, a Tucson Police Department spokesman. When officers arrived at the home near North Houghton Road and East Speedway, they were unable to make contact with anyone inside. Hostage negotiators were also called out to the scene, Dugan said. Police made the decision to use a bomb unit robot to enter the residence. The robot located a dead man inside the house. Dugan said a woman was also found with possible gunshot wounds. SWAT personnel, along with medics, entered the home to treat the woman. She was taken by ambulance to a hospital, and her injuries were not believed to be life-threatening. Officers found a teen boy dead inside the home, Dugan said. The boy who alerted the neighbor was not harmed, according to Dugan. The names of the suspect and victims were not immediately released. On to you, Bill.
Okie doke, and I'll take Tim Steller as usual. You always leave him for me. Thanks, Barney. let's see. And, of course, he's going to write about this immigration thing with the separating children. This has become really visceral on social media, so Tim Steller says, which elected officials took a stand on family separation? Our immigration laws and border problems are a hell of a puzzle, like a jigsaw without edge pieces in kaleidoscopic colors. You can understand why other people don't put the immigration puzzle together the exact same way you would. Some might want to eliminate the diversity via the diversity visa lottery, while others want to increase work visas, and others want to build a wall. There are endless permutations. But the policy of deliberately separating children from their parents, turning children accompanied by their families into unaccompanied children, that's not so complicated. It was, contrary to the Department of Homeland Security Secretary's claims, a new policy intended to discourage people from coming to the border to cross illegally or to claim asylum. It was not an unintentional side effect of a zero-tolerance policy, prosecution policy, as I explained in a June 2nd column. And it served as a gut check for Arizona politicians, one of those rare issues in immigration where I believe there was a clear right or wrong answer. In this pass-fail test, trying to finesse family separation was the wrong answer. Speaking out directly, or better yet, got a pop-up on my screen. It always distracts me. It served as a gut check for Arizona politicians, one of those rare issues where, yeah, there was a right or wrong answer. Speaking out directly, or better yet, acting out against the family separation policy was the right answer. It was easier for Democrats to give a right answer because they don't have any pressure to show loyalty to President Trump and his supporters. Most of them upheld their obligation with local Democratic politicians like Tucson Mayor Jonathan Rothschild coming out in opposition hard and early. It was a tougher situation for Republicans, especially those facing a primary election. These are some of the reactions of our GOP elected officials to the initial policy of separating children from parents before Trump reversed course. Senator John McCain came out hard against the policy Monday. The administration's current family separation policy is an affront. This is quoting now. The administration's current family separation policy is an affront to the decency of the American people and contrary to principles and values upon which our nation was founded. The administration has the power to rescind this policy. It should do so now. And Tim Steller's grade for McCain is pass. He was firm in putting responsibility where it rightfully lay. Now he goes on to Senator Jeff Flake. He raised questions about family separation early. In a June 16th letter co-written by Maine Senator Susan Collins to DHS, Department of Homeland Security, DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, and Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar. Quoting, "We write regarding the safety and security of young children immigrating to the United States. Secretary Nielsen recently appeared before the U.S. Senate and testified that immigrant parents and children who present themselves at U.S. ports of entry to request asylum will not be separated. Despite Secretary Nielsen's testimony, a number of media outlets have reported instances where parents and children seeking asylum at a port of entry have been separated. Grade pass." Flake objected on moral grounds. Later, and his, Flake objected on moral grounds later, and his earlier questions about asylum seekers were important. Representative Martha McSally, the congresswoman who is running for the GOP nomination for U.S. Senate, said Monday, "We need to enforce our laws in a consistent and humane manner, and DHS should not have to choose between enforcing the law and keeping children with their parents. My immigration bill, which I've been working on since last September, fixes this by allowing children to stay with their parents as they undergo due process. I hope we can get a version of my bill out of the House this week and on the president's desk immediately to address many urgent issues like this." Grade fail. McSally glossed over the president's policy without opposing it on the way to promoting her own bill, which failed on Thursday. Governor Doug Ducey, who is running for re-election and has a Republican challenger for the nomination, said he opposed family separation at the Arizona-Mexico Commission summit last week. Quoting, "I don't want to see children separated from their parents. My heart breaks for these families," Ducey said. "At the same time, we need to look at the role of parental responsibility when an adult is approaching our border conducting illegal activity with a child." Grade fail. In this and other comments, Ducey expressed sympathy but didn't seem to appreciate that in most cases, asylum seekers are not breaking the law, even if they cross the border between the ports of entry, as long as they try to approach a government officer to turn themselves in. Attorney General Mark Brnovich announced his opposition to the policy in a tweet that was a bit soft for me, but quickly sharpened to the point in a follow-up tweet. "The federal government needs to secure the border without taking a 2-year-old kid away from their mom. We can secure the border now without separating families. Ultimately, Congress needs to come up with a long-term solution, or we will continue to lurch from crisis to crisis." Grade pass. Brnovich, a Republican running for re-election, was direct in opposing the policy. Pima County Supervisor Allie Miller had a predictably negative view when the board considered a resolution on Tuesday opposing family separation, but fellow Republican Supervisor Steve Christie's stated reasoning came as a surprise to some. Quoting, "I won't be supporting this resolution. This is a tragic result of those who don't believe in legal immigration and continue to use their children as pawns and shields to promote an open-door policy without comprehensive immigration reform." Grade fail. If he thinks Guatemalan migrants are trying to promote any policy, not simply fleeing their situations, he is misunderstanding this issue. So, there's enough of Tim Steller. There's some odds and ends on local politics. I'll leave those maybe till later and send it back to you, Barney.
Okay, Judge, GOP hopeful in CD1 can remain on ballot despite error on petition. By Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services, Phoenix. Republican Wendy Rogers can run for Congress in District 1 despite an error on her nominating petitions. A Maricopa County Superior Court judge ruled Thursday. Judge James Smith acknowledged that state law requires that petitions list the county of the people who are signing it. The aim is to make it easier for recorders in each county to verify the signatures of the local voters. What happened in this case is that many, if not most, of the petitions were calculated on Rogers' behalf were labeled as coming from Coconino County. Her attorney, Michael Bundy, said that was an apparent error on the part of campaign workers who thought the requirement was to list the county of the candidate's residence. Challenging attorney Alexander Kolodin argued that the error invalidated the petitions from other counties. There are 11 in the sprawling district, which would have left Rogers short of the signatures needed to qualify for the August 28th primary. The judge said the error didn't confuse those who were signing the petitions. There is no dispute that the petitions correctly identified the candidate, the office she seeks, her party affiliation, or the date of the election, Smith said. And he said that the signers, other than those already disqualified for other reasons, all lived within Congressional District 1. Smith did not vote the did note the county officials in a statement for the court said that getting a bunch of petitions, all with Coconino County on the top, did make it more difficult for them to analyze the signatures of their own voters, but that does not require that the signatures on the petitions from the wrong county be thrown out, the judge said. There is no competent evidence that any county official did not accurately review signatures, he wrote. Rogers, a retired Air Force lieutenant colonel, and one of the first women pilots, will face off against State Senator Steve Smith from Maricopa and Tiffany Shedd, an Eloy farmer and small business attorney. Whoever survives the GOP primary will go up against incumbent Democrat Tom O'Halloran. The congressional district is the state's largest by geography, stretching from the state's northern border through Flagstaff to the eastern edge of the state, then down through Graham, Greeland, and much of Pinal County, finally reaching into Marana, Oro Valley, and the suburbs of Tucson. This year's race marks the fifth bid by Rogers to win public office. She made a 2010 bid for the state senate along with bids to get elected to Congress from CD9 in 2012 and 2014. A 2016 run for the GOP nomination in CD1 also ran and also proved unsuccessful. On to you, Bill.
Okay, let's see here. We got time for one more story before we move on to business. So, Ducey won't debate rival Bennett before August 28 GOP primary. This is by Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services. Dateline Phoenix. Governor Doug Ducey won't debate his Republican foe with an aide calling Ken Bennett a fringe candidate, despite the fact that he was elected Secretary of State in 2010. But he will have to face him in August, at least on the ballot, if not on TV. J.P. Twist, who is managing Ducey's re-election campaign, said the incumbent sees no reason to share the stage with Bennett, pointing out that the two faced off in a multi-candidate race for the GOP nomination 4 years ago. Ducey won the primary, Bennett placed fourth, and later went on to beat Democrat Fred Duval. If Bennett intends to debate, he can argue with himself, Twist said. That's Twist managing Ducey's re-election campaign. There is no legal requirement for Ducey to do anything other than organized campaign rallies, if even that, given that the governor has the benefit of incumbency and the free media that generates every time he makes a pronouncement. Ducey also has the benefit of having raised more than $3.3 million. Having raised more than $3.3 million so far for the campaign. That doesn't count money that others, including the Republican Governors Association and the business-backed Arizona Education Project, already have spent on TV commercials extolling the virtues of what Ducey has done for public education. And Ducey was the beneficiary of a lot of outside funding in his 2014 win. Only Bennett, who plans to run with public financing, assuming he can get the requisite $4,005 donations, is required by law to debate. Oh. Okay, so he's going to run with public financing, but to do that, you got to get $4,005 donations. And if so, he is required by law to debate. Well, what if nobody will debate him? Tim Collins, executive director of Citizens Clean Elections Commission, said if Ducey doesn't show for the scheduled August 1st debate, he will have the entire half hour on public television to answer questions, all without being contradicted by Ducey. Huh. Okay, if Benefit qualifies for public funding, he will get $839,704 for the primary. While Twist has dismissed Bennett as a fringe candidate, that didn't stop Ducey supporters from trying to keep the incumbent from having to face any challenge in the Republican primary. But that case, originally scheduled for a hearing Thursday, was being dismissed after attorneys concluded that Bennett, in fact, does have enough valid signatures on his petitions. And that sets the stage for the August 28 primary. Twist is basing the assessment of Bennett as a fringe candidate based in part on his comments that if he were governor, he would not appoint Cindy McCain to her husband's seat if the senator died in office or resigned. That sparked an outcry from some quarters of the Republican Party and from Ducey's own aides that it was inappropriate for Bennett to even mention such a thing while John McCain remains a senator and while he fights a particularly aggressive form of brain cancer. But those gubernatorial aides, while lashing out at Bennett, never specifically denied that the governor has considered the idea. And Bennett said his remarks hardly have him out on the fringe. Everywhere I go, the vast majority of everybody I talk to agrees that Cindy McCain should not be appointed to replace John when he can no longer serve. Twist, however, said that Bennett went over the line using his vow not to name Cindy as a replacement at a fundraising letter. He called Bennett a craven opportunist. While Ducey is unwilling to show up for a debate, that did not stop Twist, acting on the governor's behalf, from lobbying some criticism of Bennett's time as Senate president from 2003 through 2007. He accused Bennett of carrying Janet Napolitano's water, referring to the then Democratic governor and calling him a Napolitano apologist. And that story runs on a while longer, but we're running late here. We're going to turn to the business section at 7:46 here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Take us away, Barney.
Okay. There's a big picture here of the U of A Tech Park at 9070 South Reeder Road, which employs 5,870 people last year in 52 companies. And the headline is Tech Park Economic Impact Grew Last Year, report says, by David Wichner of the Daily Star. The University of Arizona Science and Technology Park had an overall economic impact of nearly $2 billion statewide in 2017 as it continued to recover after slumping during the last recession, according to a new report. The sprawling tech park on South Reeder Road near Interstate 10 employed 5,870 people in 52 companies last year, with total direct output of $1.11 billion, according to a study by VP Research and Consulting. Including jobs created outside of Pima County, the Tech Park was credited with 11,752 jobs and wages of $769 million statewide, for a total economic output including wages, $1.98 billion. The 1,345-acre Tech Park houses tenants including IBM Corporation, which sold the property to the U of A in 1994 after dropping manufacturing operations there, Raytheon Missile Systems, Major customer service call center operators City and Optum Rx, and a number of smaller tech-oriented companies, with indirect and induced impacts such as 4,541 jobs supported by work at the tech park. The park had a total economic output of $1.7 billion in Pima County last year. That was up more than 13% from total output of $1.5 billion in 2015, the last year for which comparative figures were available, but it was still shy of the $2.3 billion counted in 2013 and output of $3 billion in 2008 at the outset of the Great Recession. The report's author is Vera Pavlikovich Kochi, a longtime U of A economist who now works as an independent consultant. Other findings from the report. The tech park generated an additional 78 jobs in Pima County for every 100 direct jobs at tenant employers, while every dollar of the park's output generated an additional 53 cents of economic activity elsewhere in the county. And I'm just going to pass this on to you, Bill. I don't know anybody's going to remember all these numbers.
Oh, yes, indeed. I'm just going to take a test. Let's see here. Okay, I want to take a glance at the markets here. For those who are interested, they've been in a slump for the last week or so. Car makers and technology and industrial companies fell Thursday as investors focused on the U.S.-China trade dispute. The Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped for the eighth day in a row. While investors generally don't expect a trade war between the U.S. and China, they remain sensitive to signs that rising tariffs and trade tensions will hurt the global economy and reduce profits. So, the Dow was down 196 points to close at 24,461. NASDAQ was down 68, closing at 77,12. S&P 500 down 17.5 to close at 2,749. And the Russell 2000 down 18 points to close at 1688. Ouch. So, let's see. Going to take a look at this. Might be of interest to a lot of folks who shop online. Online shoppers may soon be hit with more sales taxes. This is by Joseph Pisani, AP retail writer, Dateline New York. Attention Kmart shoppers. No. It says, attention shoppers. You may soon be paying more taxes on what you put in your online cart. A Supreme Court ruled Thursday that states can require online retailers to collect sales tax on purchases that come from states where they don't have any shops, offices, or warehouses. Before that, retailers didn't have to collect sales taxes, state sales taxes, if it was shipping items to someone in a state where the business did not have a physical presence. Shoppers were generally supposed to pay the sales tax to the state themselves, but most didn't, said Gerald Storch, who was CEO of department store operator Hudson's Bay and now runs a retail consulting firm. The ruling is a victory for states that said they were losing billions of dollars in revenue every year, and for large retailers that had argued that the physical presence rule meant that they were playing by different rules than online-only sellers. Small businesses may have to figure out how to comply with various state sales tax laws, though there are software options to help. But what does it all mean for shoppers? Here's some more information about the effect of the ruling. Don't I already pay sales tax when I buy online, is the question. You may, depending on where you live and what online store you shop at. Many big retailers, such as Amazon.com and Macy's, already collected sales tax for online purchases because they had warehouses or stores in those states. But smaller online stores may not have been collecting sales tax, which the Supreme Court ruling could change. When will I start to see the changes? You'll have to pay up if the state you live in passes laws that require online retailers to collect sales tax, says Joseph Bishop Hinchman, the executive vice president of the Tax Foundation. But when and if that happens depends on the state. Some may pass laws quickly, others can take years, and some states, like the ones that don't have a sales tax, may choose not to require it, says Bishop Hinchman. David Campbell, CEO of TaxCloud, one of the companies that manufactures tax compliance software, also noted that how long it may take for sales to weigh in isn't known since, some states have part-time legislatures. I shop on Amazon all the time. Will it cost more now? If you're a big Amazon.com shopper and live in one of the 48 states with a sales tax, you're likely already paying sales tax on some orders. Amazon collects sales tax for products that it sells directly, but third-party vendors that sell goods on the site may not collect sales tax. That may change as state laws are modified. Amazon has said that half of the items purchased from its site come from third-party sellers. And let's see, final question. Will people be turned off of online shopping by sales tax? It remains to be seen if online shoppers will abandon their virtual carts because of a sales tax. Some shoppers may not notice or care, analysts say, and some shoppers find online shopping too convenient to give up. Ed Taisanu, a 39-year-old sales manager in Minnesota, doesn't think a new tax will change his buying habits, which is a mix of in-store and online. He said retail stores have essentially become showrooms for things that he buys online, and he will keep shopping online if he can still get a better price. I don't have to travel anywhere, and typically online prices are still lower than retail stores, Taisanu said. So we'll all have to decide if this is going to make a difference to us. And in the meanwhile, back to you.
Okay, Tucson Airport Board okays new land lease for growing Raytheon. By David Witcher, again, of the Arizona Daily Star. The Tucson Airport Authority has approved a new lease for Raytheon Missile Systems that adds about 39 acres of vacant land to its current plant footprint adjacent to the airport. The land between East Aero Park Boulevard and East Hermans Road along Old Nogales Highway will be added to Raytheon's existing leasehold of 231 acres of airport-owned property via a new lease or an amendment to the company's existing lease. The plan was unanimously approved by the Airport Authority's governing board at a special meeting on Wednesday. Raytheon requested the additional space for further facility construction. Documents prepared for the TAA board said the company had no immediate comment. Raytheon, the region's biggest private employer with more than 10,000 local workers, has already finished one new building and is working on several others as part of a major expansion of its airport site. The agreement sets the land lease rate at fair market value of 20 cents per square foot, the same as the current lease, and will initially raise Raytheon's annual rent by about $340,000, according to the proposal approved by the board. Raytheon's existing lease, which consolidated some older leases and added 21 acres of land, became effective in July 2017 and has an initial term of 30 years with two 15-year extension options. The new lease would have the same terms, including a requirement that Raytheon invest a minimum amount in its new facilities on the leased property and that any facilities left on the property at the end of the lease revert to the airport. Under the most recent lease, Raytheon committed to additional capital investment of $137 million to support an expansion expected to add at least 1,900 jobs over a decade, airport officials said. In other actions, the TAA board approved a proposal to accelerate a planned $800,000 project to develop parcels along Aero Park Boulevard, citing increased revenues and lower operational costs. The board also okayed spending $700,000 on a project to turn the former International Departures Area on Concourse B into a new area for charter flight operators.
Okay.
How do you, pal?
And we are all out of time for the business section, and brings us to the end of this hour of the Arizona Daily Star, but I wanted to let you know that SunSounds has a new friend, but they're not new to Tucson. Tucson Realtors Charitable Foundation has supported many organizations in Tucson for many years. Through financial programs, education, housing initiatives, community events, and activities, all with one purpose, to enrich and enhance the lives of people in our community. Tucson Realtors Charitable Foundation is truly a community partner, and we at SunSounds welcome their friendship and their support. And with that said, we're going to take a two-minute break. We're going to be back at the top of the hour with the opinions and letters to the editor and world of news and blah, 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 sports, you name it. We'll be right back.
If you're a person who loves the beautiful language of poetry, Sun Sounds has something just for you. Every Sunday night at 10 o'clock, Sun Sounds brings you the best in poetry from renowned poets, past and present. Timeless themes of love and romance, nature, contemplation, adventure. When you're in the mood for a little inspiration on a Sunday night, escape into the wonderful world of poetry. Sunday night at 10 on Sun Sounds.
I'm Linda Primavera, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds Short Stories program. I like lots of variety, so I choose a mix of classic and contemporary stories, both American and international authors, and stories that range from realism to magical realism. I hope you hear some of your old favorite authors and enjoy discovering new authors, too. Please join me on Fridays at 2 p.m. or 11:30 p.m. on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
As we get older, there's nothing like reminiscing. That's what we do on Sun Sounds every Tuesday afternoon at 3. We read from good old days, reminisce, new choices, and modern maturity. It's not about